This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Resource Center. I'm Angeline Tay. We have the country CEO of PNG Malaysia, Singapore and Brunei, Ong Yu Huang, with us today. For a company of this scale, Yu Huang, what's the biggest challenge in managing it?
I think in any businesses, right, human assets are the most important for us and perhaps also the most difficult to manage. PNG, we are a promote from within company. For the last 179 years, we are the second oldest company in the Dow Jones Index. So we pride ourselves from finding the best talent possible fresh from school every year. Every year across all the country we operate in, we spend extensive amount of time hiring young talents. And when we bring them in, we make sure we give them early responsibility. We don't hire management trainee, we hire managers. And after that, we provide very intensive career planning. So early on, we're talking about, you know, we have a very young organization in Malaysia, not because of anything else, but because a lot of seniors Malaysian are overseas. To date, we have about 8 Malaysian that are overseas doing international assignment as of now. Finally, we believe that, you know, career planning is very important, and then we also encourage lifelong learning. You know, even for myself as a CEO, I just came from a GM college that was run by the CEO of PNG Malaysia. So it's precisely the fact that the talent pipeline is so important for us. As a result, you know, thinking about we have to manage the career of 110,000 employees worldwide.
Yeah.
So that itself presents immense challenge. How do we constantly keep them fulfilled? Because we just can't go out like any other company to poach people, especially at mid to senior level. So just because we needed them very badly and we really treated them very well, so we had to spend a lot of effort to make sure that and they are really, really, their careers are really well planned out.
And is it hard to look for young talents? Because you did say that your company is relatively very young. It's an average age of 28 years old.
Let me put it this way. I think it's not difficult to look for young talent. I think perhaps looking for great quality young talent that fits with the culture, that's where the challenge lies. Most recently, in fact, every year we have major campus activities. So most recently, we just have a PNG open house, and we had a at Central, a nice hotel, 5-star hotel. We invited about top 200 students to come and attend our open house. In the open house, we share very broadly about what we do in PNG, who PNG is, and share with them our lifelong stories and experience. Hopefully, that will inspire them to want to join us. The good news is after the whole open house, we did a quick survey. Almost 198 said they would like to join PNG.
And what do you think that is so? Why? How come the brand for PNG, employee brand especially, is so attractive to young people?
I think for a few reasons, right? First of all, I think PNG is a great company from my perspective. We are 179 years old. We have a great culture that has been very consistent and founded on great purpose, great values, and principle. So those PVPs are very essential to how we operate and has remained very consistent to today. So if I mention the values very briefly, you know, they are really just about ownership. They are about leadership, passion for winning, and trust and integrity. Something that, you know, resonate with everybody, you know, and that could do resonate even with the millennials of this generation.
Mm-hmm. And is it hard to manage then? Because you say that you recruit a lot of young people, but you know it's hard to find a great one that fits the culture, right? But now that you have so many young people working for your organization, is it a challenge then to manage them?
We all know millennials work differently from Generation X, Generation Y, like myself. But that's not because they are different, in my opinion. It's just because the way that they are brought up are different. They grew up with the age of digital iPad and things like that. It's very different from what we grew up earlier on.
Mm-hmm.
Fundamentally, I think we all want to work for a company that we felt that we belong. We felt that we can contribute and perform at our peak and have fun along the way. Just to illustrate the point, just last weekend, I was with a couple of young people. We had a party, so we went to have a few drinks. And one of the topics that came out was, what do we have to do from a management standpoint to make it a more happening, a happier place in the office? And we laugh a lot and we joke a lot. And interestingly, the two or three ideas that came up was they want to have a Haagen-Dazs Friday. They say they want to have a cappuccino Tuesday. They want to have exotic fruits Monday. And we laugh a lot. But I came back to the office on Monday and said, look, hey, it's not rocket science. It doesn't cost a lot. And if that really makes people happy, we'll do it. So Friday, we're going to have Haagen-Dazs Friday for the first time in the office. And so far, what I gather, everybody's quite thrilled about the idea.
Mm-hmm. And how big is your team here in Malaysia?
All in for about 90 people.
And like you said, it's over 100,000 employees worldwide, right? And
yes.
It's an army, right? It's a huge organization. In terms of that, how do you move quickly? Because right now we hear a lot of terms like corporate entrepreneurship. Big organizations have to be quick to adapt to what's happening, the disruption of the market. And how is PNG viewing this, and whether you think your industry as an FMCG is being disrupted, and what are the ways that you're now working towards to adapt, to be agile, to change quickly?
Definitely right. If I look at the pace that the whole thing is evolving, what do we do differently? So recently we just roll out a new, we call it culture. We label it as 4D. The first D stands to dare, daring, dare to be the best. The second D is all about, you know, being very deliberate. And the third D is about depth, really have depth. And the fourth D is about dynamic. If I would just elaborate very quickly, you know, to be daring is to be there to be the best. And that means continue to set very high benchmark, you know, to surpass yourself. So such a high standard that you continue to be the best in the market, in everything that we do. The second D is about being deliberate. We ask people to be very choiceful, make clear priorities, and make them quickly with a sense of agility and urgency. The third D is about depth. We don't want superficial analysis. We don't want spectators. So here we ask people to develop mastery in their job, to put in that extra effort to make sure that they became a great master in a topic, right? So they can be a great contributor. And lastly, dynamic. That was earlier on, we talked about Haagen-Dazs Friday, right? So we want the place to be more family-like, a place that we feel that you belong, a place that you can continue to perform at your peak, and a place that you feel trusted. So this 4D culture, we think will help us to be more agile and adapt to this rapidly changing world that we're living in.
Mm-hmm. And you've actually have your entire career at PNG. Tell us about your career, you know, your career progression within the company, and then how much has the industry changed since you started, you know, when you first joined PNG?
I started with PNG about 20 years ago as a young sales rep. And we are promoted from within company, we had to start from the lowest level possible. As a young sales rep, I moved on to become what we call the key account manager, trade marketing manager, from a local role to a regional sales role, then eventually to a global role. And over the last 20 years, I had about 10 assignments and worked in about 4 countries, US, Singapore, China, and now Malaysia. One of the most dramatic impact in our industry, maybe not just limited to our industry, but across the board, was the evolution of technology. I still remember the days where we were given a pager. I still had a pager in my drawer.
It's like in the 90s, right? Late 80s, early 90s.
Yes, thank you for reminding me of my age. So it was the 90s. So the pager and the payphone. And then obviously we have a cell phone, the first Ericsson, Nokia.
There's the Motorola ones, the big ones.
Exactly. That was in the even earlier. That was very costly. And then after that, we have obviously BlackBerry, which is totally extinct now. And then we have iPhone, right? So that has drive tremendous amount of productivity, and that actually has transformed the industry very, very interesting. If I look back, the business size that we had 20 years ago in this part of the world was probably about 20%. And now we've grown 5 times, and the number of people is actually less. So it's tremendous amount of productivity. And to deal with that change, PNG has actually also changed. First of all, we actually roll out flex work. Flex work policy has essentially 2 key components. The first is about hot desking, no fixed sitting arrangement for anybody. So when you come to the office, you can sit anywhere you want. You can sit with your team, sit with other team, or sit with yourself if you want more privacy for the day. The second one the second big change that we wrote was work from home. So about once a day, a week, we allow employees to work from home. So I think that's rather appealing to people of different life stages, whether you're millennium or you're Generation X. So for the young people, they felt that they have time, quiet time, to stay at home and to think through some issues and not get bogged down by key meetings. And for those with the family, sometimes they want to spend some time at home with their kids, but at the same time able to work as well. So we provided the flexibility, and all these are being enabled by technology.
What is the vision of the company in order to cope with such rapid change in every aspect of life, work and technology? That's right up next with the country CEO at PNG Malaysia, Singapore and Brunei, Ong Yu Huang. So stay with us on Resource Centre, BFM 89.9.
Business, finance and more. BFM 89.9.
You're still with us on Resource Centre, and the country CEO of PNG Malaysia, Singapore and Brunei is with us to share the insights in managing employees in a corporate giant. Earlier, we talked about coping with the rapid change, especially with the injection of technology and improved productivity. But what is your vision in order to handle such changes?
On my vision, it's in line with the company vision. You know, in the next 3 to 5 years, I hope that PNG will continue to be the leading FMCG company in this part of the world, with the most loved brands by the Malaysians and Singaporeans. On top of that, you know, run by the world's best and most talented organization that is very, very in touch with the society by giving back. By that, I'm referring to getting more involved in CSR activities, making sure that, you know, beyond just working and contributing, we are also giving back to the society at large.
And speaking of sustainability, right, according to a report by Amnesty International recently about the palm oil scandal in Wilmar and Indonesia, there were news of child labour being used in the industry. So what piqued me was that PNG were one of the names mentioned in the report. I just want to know, what are your views about this?
First of all, PNG were founded upon our purpose, value and principle. We definitely respect all human rights. We do not support any of these that violate the human right. In fact, we are working very closely with FGV, Federal Group, to make sure that all the palm oil that we secure from are from a sustainably source.
And you were talking about CSR efforts earlier, right? Could you run us through some of the recent CSR efforts and how it has impacted the community?
So since my appointment, we actually have embarked on quite a few CSR effort, right? And now we're just narrowing down to one that we thought we want to make sure that we get the broadest support within our company. So the first one that we embarked upon was the Palawan Planet on the recycling, making sure that, you know, all our products are recyclable. The second one, we actually raised fund for the Malaysia Spastic Children Association. We also mentioned raise fund for the Buddhist Mass Foundation. And also recently, we were involved in some of the our clean water program. So in PNG, we actually manufacture clean water sachet. Mm-hmm. It's a sachet that, you know, you can actually turn drain water and rainwater potable. So in our most recent effort, I led a team of PNG people. We went to Sabah to visit a village. One of the dam was broken, and the village hasn't had clean water for a long time. So we went to visit them and demonstrate to them how our sachet can actually help them, and we actually donated some sachet to them.
Oh, wow. Tell us more about the sachet. It sounds pretty interesting.
Okay. In PNG, most of our brands are for sales in the market. We do have this clean water technology with us, and we actually have a manufacturing plant in Singapore as well. But this product is not for sale. This product is part of our CSR program globally. So we work with many NGOs, volunteer organization, to distribute sachet, usually to flood areas, to areas where there's natural disasters, or to areas whereby clean water is not easily accessible, especially in third world countries like Africa.
Mm-hmm. How does it work? Because you were saying that you make drain water or rainwater portable. It means it's drinkable water,
yes.
Right? How does it work? I'm just curious.
So I'll just share you my experience when we were in Sabah just about a month back, right? So what we did when we were there with the villagers' head, gathering all the villagers, right? What we did was that we say, okay, go and collect water beforehand. So some of them brought drain water, some brought rainwater, and there was like about 10 pails, right? So one sachet can actually clean up about 10 liters of water, right? So what you do is you open the sachet, you drop it into a pail of that dirty water, and then you begin to stir. After a few minutes, all the so-called contaminants coagulate into lump. And then what you need to do is just filter off the solid particles, and the rest of the water can be drank.
Wow.
Yeah. So I actually, and my team actually drank a few cups to illustrate that we're perfectly fine.
Okay. How long has this been going on? It's something new to me.
Actually, P&G has owned this technology for a long time. It is not anything new. If I don't recall wrongly, we probably have served a few billion liters of clean water, and mostly in Africa's and third world country. So I would think it's been around for at least 10 years.
And if people would like to access to this sachet, is there a way for them to get to it?
Yes, there is. Currently, we actually are working on a couple of programs with the Civil Defense Force in Malaysia. Particularly now, we're working on a project to see how we can help East Coast if there's a flood. We hope there's no flood, but if there is, how can we get the sachet to them? We're still talking to a few NGO in Malaysia to find out which one that we can collaborate and partner with to make sure that the products are more widely accessible to the Malaysia.
And it's interesting, speaking of East Malaysia, P&G recently consolidated distributors in East Malaysia. So what kind of growth have you seen so far, you know, in this move, and what are you expecting from this move?
Yes, we did consolidate our distributor in East Malaysia. East Malaysia has, in the context of Malaysia, generally be the less remembered than Peninsula Malaysia, getting less attention. So this was a consolidation of our East Malaysian distributor into one. First of all, it brings about huge productivity. It drives a lot of scale. And for the employees there now, they can work for a bigger distributor. They have more career opportunity for the people there. And two, because of the bigger scale operation, we were able to now reinvest back into what we call with our retail partners to do more promotions and to drive more consumer awareness. So far, the growth has been too early to tell because we just finished the consolidation in just about a few months ago.
But what are the opportunities, you know, are you seeing in that area? You know, for entrepreneurs maybe perhaps who would like to expand to East Malaysia, what kind of insight would you be able to provide us?
First of all, when I visit East Malaysia, right, the first thing is definitely less intensive competition versus Peninsula Malaysia. So because of that, it definitely creates more opportunity. Though I think there's still a lot of untapped potential. From a retail industry standpoint, we call it outlets, right? The universe is still very dispersed. There are still a lot of outlets. They are not, you know, having a full range of products. So if you are into FMCG, you know, and if you have the appetite for risk, you know, there is a, if you go deep into the market, the tier 2, the tier 3 town, you can actually expand your distribution quite dramatically.
And what is the challenge, would you say, if they want to expand into East Malaysia?
I think the infrastructure compared to Peninsula Malaysia, I realize some of the places are really not easy to reach. And when you get there, you realize some places takes a few hours to get there. So I think, first of all, to overcome the infrastructure challenges, I would advocate that, you know, you find a very strong local partner and piggyback on the logistic network.
And tell us about the retail space as well, right? How much has it changed? And will it change even further? Because a lot of people say retail is currently suffering.
So I just came back from a global conference, right? I think the retail industry is going to evolve at a pace that is even faster than we can imagine. So we call it G1 to G4, right? Generation 1 to Generation 4. If you were to go out of the office, yeah, the mom and pop shop, we call it Generation 1. So they're very small, high-frequency store, lots of them. There's still, about based on my last census, 40,000 of them in Malaysia. Then there's a Generation 2 store, more likely in the likes of Tesco and Big Hyper and Super. So still more advanced, but, you know, but and very, very, very established. Then we have the G3, Generation 3, it'll be the likes of what we call the pure play, like the Amazons. So Amazons are what we call the Generation 3, whereby they don't operate with a retail front, they're just purely e-commerce. And then obviously there's this, in our word, the challenging one would be the G4. So if you look at the market space in China, interesting China now is perhaps the most advanced with Alibaba. So you have a company, Alibaba, that actually owns the media space. They have payment company. They have retail store. So, and because of the ecosystem they have, that's perhaps the most advanced retail format that we'll eventually see in the years to come. So today, Malaysia essentially is still in what we call the G1 and G2 format. We think the G3 format will come eventually. Yeah. And many of our retail partners are already going online, having e-commerce shopping.
Finally, I guess, is there anything else you would like to share based on your experience, you know, working for an FMCG company?
I think first of all, right, maybe I look into how in P&G, how we approach a business. And then this is open public domain. We, our ex-CEO, A.G. Lafley, actually wrote a book called Where to Play. Right, so it's a public domain. So it's a great book to read, and it kind of perhaps share with entrepreneurs to think about how they think about the business. And the way that A.G. Lafley articulated the business strategy was very clear. I think first of all, right, he began with, you know, what are the problems we're trying to solve? What's the issue at hand? And then try to frame it in a way that, you know, it can be digested, that is clear and easy to articulate. And once you have the problems identified, you then set your objective and goal against it. So for private entrepreneur as well. And once you're clear on a goal, A.G. Lafley in the book called, you know, Where to Play and How to Win is the making of a great strategy. So where do you want to play? So define the space, whether it's market, consumer segment, location, format, to where do you want to play? Be very specific for your industry. And then from there, you derive your what we call how to win. So the where is clear. Now, how are you going to execute those strategies? So what are a few big things that we're going to do? After the how to win is mapped out, typically what we would do and recommend is that, you know, those things be translated into action plans that entrepreneurs can follow through. Because I think the biggest challenge for entrepreneurs is also having a very clear thinking of where they want to end up. And how do you put it in strategy format whereby, you know, where do you want to play and where not to play, right? This is very important because entrepreneur likes to be all things to everybody because that's the nature of being safe, right? The more I have, the more protected I feel. But that's one of the pitfalls I see for entrepreneurs. And often by doing so, you overextend your resources. So the where to play, besides defining where you want to play, you clearly define where you don't want to play and stick to that. First of all, you have to believe that, you know, that's the right thing to do. And once you've done so, the how to win is really about, you know, how do you, where do you put your plan, where do you put your retail shop, which branch do you invest in, do you do marketing, do you price high, do you price low, right? Then the rest should follow naturally.
Would you be able to give one example based on P&G's experience when it comes to perhaps opening in a new market, you know, where to play and how to win strategy?
I'll try to give a more generic one so that at least it's more applicable for people, right? And if you look at three markets of Singapore, Malaysia, and Brunei, for instance, right? So first of all, we have to articulate, you know, what's our vision, right? And this vision has to be one that's truly inspiring and the employee can aspire to, and one that is clearly and simply articulated so everybody can understand and grasp it. With that vision kind of laid out, you kind of define where you want to play and where you don't want to play. You know? So where we want to play are core categories that we have. We believe we have a competitive advantage. Where we don't want to play is, are things that we believe that we don't have a competitive advantage. Mm-hmm. And there's no right to win. So that's clearly defined. And how to win, obviously, then we have to work, look at our current resources. We look at Singapore versus Malaysia. And we look at, you know, which sites will give us a better return on investment, which media house can give us a better support, and which form of media, whether Singapore will perhaps more digital, and in Malaysia will perhaps be more what we call free-to-air and cable. So those kind of translate into the how to win. And then we do it brand by brand by brand.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Month by month by month. And that's how we match and develop our strategy.
Okay. And how many brands do you have under your umbrella?
Globally, we still have about 80 to 90 brands. In Malaysia today, we have about 15 brands. So we still have a lot of runway if we can bring in more brands to Malaysia.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Ong Yu Huang, country CEO at PNG Malaysia, Singapore and Brunei. On Resource Center, I'm Angeline Tay. Thank you for listening. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.